Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today is Mickey Huff. Listeners hopefully remember Mickey. He's been on a couple of times before. He's getting to be a regular on the program, and well, he should be because of what he's involved in. I had the great joy of meeting Mickey late last summer out in California. He is an associate professor of history and social sciences at Diablo Valley College. He also lectures at Sonoma State University. He's got some new things coming up. He is associate director, very important, associate director of the Media Freedom Foundation and Project Censored, his affiliation with Project Censored. He's Project Censored. He's also Project Censored's international affiliates coordinator. He's got so much, he had to update me on his resume because the old one was a bit out of date. And we could spend the whole program talking about that, but as soon as Mickey gets fully ensconced in his office, we will get into talking about the things we have in mind. And we'll probably go in a number of different directions. Lots of things going on, lots of vital topics to discuss, things that various articles in Global Research cover regularly. Hopefully listeners know it well. It absolutely is a vital site that you need to visit on a regular basis daily as new material goes up, either as featured articles, as news, crucial stuff. But the corporate media won't tell you. You know that. I don't have to explain that. And Mickey is getting involved in a book on that topic. In fact, Mickey, are we connected yet? Not yet. Okay, well, he was traveling to his office. We talked a few minutes before the hour. I told him, don't run red lights. Take your time and get there, and as soon as you do, we will get on with the conversation. Oh, my computer is acting slowly. I just want to mention the name of the book that he is writing with the Project Censored's director, Peter Phillips. Oh, my stubborn computer. Well, here's one that's working. It does act up on me. Let me just read you the title of the book they're working on. They just finished one of the chapters. The title is Inside the Military Media Industrial Complex: Impacts on Movements for Peace and Social Justice. It's a book in progress. I'm sure you will be hearing about it on this program when it's done. I'll get Mickey to explain it. Maybe he's got some kind of a schedule he wants to keep to, so he may have a rough idea when the book will be completed. When you're writing a book, you never know. You want to get it right. You want to get everything in it that needs to be gotten. It takes time. It takes time just to write articles, let alone a book. We've got a break coming up. Let's take that. Mickey should be pretty well in place very shortly, so we will take a break and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Mickey, welcome to the program. I gave you the full Monty introduction.
Too kind of you, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
I got so carried away talking about you, Mickey, that I spent less time talking about Project Censored. I certainly talked about Project Censored, but I featured you. But let me just mention, I didn't mention the websites, and I wanted to do that. Uh-huh. So hopefully listeners are very familiar with them. But ProjectCensored.org,
uh-huh,
an absolutely vital resource, and then the site themediafreedom.pnn.com, with all kinds of information from important websites like Global Research and many others. This is what listeners need to know about, and Mickey, you know so well. if we're going to get out of the damn mess that we're in, it starts with understanding what's happening. And if we're in the dark, there's no way we can fight back.
No, that's true. We're in an ongoing, just believe it or not, we are in an ongoing information blackout, despite many things that have been coming to light since the Obama election, which I know has been certainly a disappointment among many people on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And their sort of information comes out and leaks out about, oh, well, maybe we were torturing people, and, well, maybe we did waterboard Khalid Sheikh Mohammed 183 times, and, maybe, and this stuff sort of just trickles out, like the New York Times says, well, maybe we did get it wrong, but we all got it wrong, and, this just doesn't cut it. This isn't what the role of journalism in a free press society is supposed to be.
Oh, absolutely not. And then, of course, most disturbing is people have so much hope in a new day, a new administration, what they hoped would be a different kind of leader, somebody the likes of which maybe we've never seen before, certainly the first black president, and somebody that is very eloquent and very easy to believe that this guy really is going to turn things completely in a new direction. And everything that I've seen so far, he's been in office 3 months today. 3 months today, January 20th.
Yep.
And I call him George Bush's third term. I see no difference. I see the same policies. I see whitewashing the crimes of the Bush administration, continuing the same things, claiming he will close Guantanamo while he's tripling the capacity of this horrible Bagram Air Base prison that may be even worse than Guantanamo, if that's possible. Tripling the capacity. What kind of closure of Guantanamo? 240 prisons there now. They want to add 1,100 more prisoner capacity to the Bagram base, plus all the rest that's going on. What he's done with the economy, Mickey, I mean, handing, according to Bloomberg, $12.8 trillion, begun with George Bush, of course, $12.8 trillion handed over to Wall Street criminals. These aren't bankers. These people are criminals. So we reward them with our money.
It is, and you won't hear that in the corporate media, of course. And it's interesting to watch the hysterical fits that pass for news broadcasts at places like Fox News and their astroturfing tea parties and these types of things where they're just endlessly, foaming at the mouth about so many things that Obama isn't or really isn't about or isn't doing. And, they're not really focusing, of course, on the many things that are happening. Like you mentioned, the bait and switch problem with Guantanamo. And, many people I know on the progressive end of the spectrum, have been somewhat upset because, at Project Censored, what we've been doing for over three decades is trying to hold people in power to account. And we've been doing that by showing the failures of the Fourth Estate or the shortcomings of the Fourth Estate. And, we've already just rattled down a list of things that, if we had a vibrant free press in this country, more people would actually know about the legitimate things that are going on, including, of course, now the big elephant in the room, which is the Bush layover economic policies. And I don't think there's really any corporate media outlet that I have seen to date that really measures the magnitude of this multi-trillion dollar, let's not call it a bailout, as you mentioned, it's a swindle. This is amazing.
I call it looting the national wealth, Mickey.
It's looting on a credit scheme. This is money that the Fed is manufacturing out of thin air. There's little discussion about where this comes from. And I think it's also quite interesting to note that when the Bush administration was tripping over itself to dole out hundreds of billions of dollars to the banks with no strings attached and no transparency, it was, this is what needs to be done. And then when Obama takes over and continues the process, essentially, now what happens is, well, we're mortgaging the children's future. I mean, well, I mean, wasn't it the same way three months plus one day ago? What about mortgaging the future of the country's economy on the Iraq war with a couple of trillion dollars, not to mention the $600-700 billion Pentagon budget we see every year? And, you know, as your listeners obviously know, the U.S. spends more money on defense than every country on the planet combined. You know, that's just not a sustainable pattern, and it's clearly showing in global markets, because they're being driven into the ground by the United States.
Oh, absolutely, Mickey. Way back, and I want to get him back again. I've had Chalmers Johnson on the program. He's done so much important writing on how the militarism and what we're spending on that alone is bankrupting the country.
He's been warning about this for years.
Oh, for years. He wrote two books on it. He wrote two books.
And I mean, the interesting thing is that he just said, well, look, you know, people are so busy worried about military dominance and global dominance via military means. You know, close to 1,000 military bases in 130 countries. He said, "Well, the people aren't focusing on the most obvious problem: is who's going to continue to bankroll this? You know, who's going to continue to pay for all of this? Certainly not countries that are being occupied with bases and so forth."
I think it gets very complicated, Mickey. I hear it explained, and even after I hear it explained, I'm not sure I fully understand it. But we use our power literally. When we print all this money, we're creating debt. I think we should think of it not as money, but as debt.
That's kind of what I was alluding to earlier, was just that it's not even that we're spending this money. It's a different type of capital. It's very abstract. It's very peculiar. But at some juncture, there'll be some kind of reckoning. I'm afraid we're seeing that, of course, in this country, among the enormous and swelling ranks of unemployed, underemployed. You know, when you really start to roll all those factors together, you know, major commercial vacancies, foreclosures. I mean, it's a recipe for a complete disaster, and we're entering, of course, have been in, sliding into another depression.
Oh, absolutely. We really are heading into a disaster. And my feeling and my fear, they don't invite me into their policy-making sessions.
Oh, you're not invited?
So I have to speculate on their real motives. But history shows that they've pulled off smaller stunts like this in the past. They did it to Japan at the end of the 1980s, at a time that Japan was the country that could say no. It was the Japan that could say no. And they got... there were a number of things that went on, including machinations from the so-called Bank of International Settlements, the Federal Bank, the Central Bank of Central Bankers, owned by, I believe, 55 central banks of the world, but really only about five or six of them that matter, the big ones, the Fed and the ECB and Bank of Japan, Bank of England, the real power, they own it. And they raised their reserve requirements. Somehow we got Japan to raise their interest rates, and their economy just began to sink. The stock market was grossly overinflated. The real estate was even more grossly overinflated, and it just crashed.
People in this country, seriously. Just seems. I mean, we talk about what's not covered in media, you know. And I also teach history. I mean, what we don't cover in history, or what we cover up, and the things that aren't discussed, and the opportunities for lessons of the past. You know, I'm not saying that history repeats itself perfectly, but as Mark Twain alluded, it often rhymes.
Right.
You know,
indeed.
I mean, if anybody couldn't see the 1920s and what was going on with J.P. Morgan and the banks and the things then, you know, where they then are actually trying to create this kind of an issue, then stabilize the market and basically got completely out of control. But if you take a good look at what happened in the Depression, naturally, masses and masses of people lost out, including some people of means, but clearly the people at the bottom paid the heaviest prices. But there were some winners that came out of that, and some of them were, of course, the larger banks. And the government helped buttress it. You remember Franklin Roosevelt boasted he saved capitalism in 8 days.
Oh, indeed. But at the same time, they had an investigative committee, the Pecora Commission.
Right. You just wrote about this.
I just wrote about the Pecora Commission. I mean, I can't imagine a commission like that today with this guy Pecora actually held the power of Wall Street to account. He got the son of J.P. Morgan, mm-hmm. who was the unofficial Fed chairman before we had a Fed, and he made him admit he hadn't paid his income taxes for 2 years,
yeah.
et cetera, and so on. And all kinds of stuff that he revealed. Oh, Mickey, we got to take a break. That music is our song.
I know it.
Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Thanks, Stephen.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. I'm on with Mickey Hoff from, all kinds of universities in California and Project Censored, of course. Oh, Mickey, where did we leave off? Talking about the crimes of state, the crimes of the bankers, all kinds of stuff going on, and what a serious situation we find ourselves in right now. I think it really could end up far, far worse than anything we saw in the 1930s. At least we had a president then who, for the mistakes that he made, and he made plenty.
Oh, yeah.
He really wanted to do things to turn the country around. And I think most important, get people back to work. We hit a more accurate measure of unemployment then, forgetting about farmers that might have made it even higher. But just in the non-farm sector, we had 25% unemployment. Today, we'll cook the books.
Yeah, that was a national, you know, in the Depression, that was a national figure that's been agreed upon. But if you take a look, you know, locally in different areas, like places like Gary, Indiana, had over 3/4 unemployment rate.
Oh, my goodness, because of steel.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, you know, we like to play a lot of numbers games now, you know, as we did in Project Censored, you know, how we revealed things about, you know, journalists that were writing about the real death tolls in Iraq and the refugee problems and these things. You know, we live in a society that likes to, you know, that likes statistics and numbers, but it's interesting that we have sort of this fixation on them, and they often function, these, you know, official numbers and so forth, as a gatekeeping mechanism from really having people understand the implications and the human costs of what's really going on, whether it be something like death counts or refugees in Iraq, or whether it's something like unemployment at home, and underemployment, and lack, just something that really sort of underscores the lack of opportunity that so many people are seeing
today,
these days.
Today, we deliberately manipulate the things so that we create a so-called reserve army of labor. In other words, people who were just left out, but we can call on them to be employed part-time or whatever, low-paying jobs, few or no benefits, if and when we need them, and then dump them at our will if we choose to do it.
Well, live in such a stratified, society, and I know some people listening may be rolling their eyes saying, well, it's much worse in this other part of the world or something, and that's not at all what I'm saying. I'm not saying that, you know, the U.S. is the worst. What I'm saying is that for a country that professes to hold, you know, principles of equality of opportunity, you know, achievement of liberty and so forth is, you know, in dear, or hold these things to be very high in standard. The fact that so many people are left out of it is disgraceful.
Oh, indeed. We hold ourselves up as a model, and we absolutely fail. You go right down a checklist of the most important things, and we fail dismally.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the things that we're really good at are arming the rest of the world, stoking conflict, bankrupting the next several generations of Americans. We're at the top of some of these lists, but, you know, the lists that we're not at the top of are things like healthcare delivery, healthcare quality, free press, you know, in terms of how free our press is. I mean, we're way down on these lists globally. You know, when one bothers to examine again, you know, the reality of the numbers, and it's again, it's a shame because it's not that people in the U.S. cannot understand these things. It's that many people are not given the opportunity to because they don't have sort of a ready access to this kind of information. You know, people don't come home from work and turn on the Global Research NewsHour. They go home and they turn on CNN, the so-called most trusted name in news, or Fox, Fair and Balanced. You know, these types of things. And these major media businesses are literally getting away with, crimes in their own right for misleading and misinforming and not accurately informing the public on the key issues that matter most to most Americans.
And it really has gotten worse over the years, Mickey. It never was really that good. But one of the things, I came up with one line in a past article. I might have used it a couple of times. But I think we're both old enough to remember the days of Walter Cronkite.
Oh, yes.
And indeed how well I remember him. The line that I just popped into my head once was, we've come from Cronkite to Couric.
Yeah, I know.
So a legitimate news guy, a reputable guy, I mean, people trusted him, and now CBS, I guess she's still their evening anchor. I don't watch. I don't know. But I guess she is. She's an entertainer. She's not a news person.
Yeah, we've gone from from news and information clearly through infotainment, you know, and I know Peter Phillips at Project Censored has talked about this for years, and I've talked about this for years with my students. A book written by the late media studies professor at New York University, Neil Postman, who wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death years ago back in the
80s. I read the book.
I'm sorry?
I read the book.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I mean, his whole idea was we're becoming much more Huxleyan, not as much Orwellian, even though those trappings are there. And you know, our servitude is our entertainment and our infantilization, and our culture has really pushed this forward and really fostered this idea. Cronkite, actually, who was a supporter of Project Censored, you know, you'll remember in Vietnam, you know, Cronkite actually had the temerity to say, "Hey, what's going on? I thought we were winning this war." You know, when seeing the Tet Offensive, I mean, where were the Cronkites? You know, in the run-up to the Iraq War, where were these people? They failed.
We need to break again. I think the power establishment blamed him for turning the public against the war because of the things that he reported. Anyway,
because he was telling the truth.
He was telling the truth. We need to take another break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Censored. Mickey, let me just mention one thing, and in my introduction I mentioned the book you and Peter are working on, but Project Censored just gets better and better all the time. You've been around for 30 years, and my goodness, I mean, everybody needs to know about Project Censored and what you do, but you've gone global, and you've got more affiliates, and you're doing more news, and you're getting the information out to a greater number of people. And this can only keep mushrooming and growing and growing and growing. And what a glorious time it would be when you reach more people than these characters that suppress the real news to keep us from knowing what's happening.
Well, that's certainly what we're trying. We're trying, you know, we're really heading in that direction through Project Censored International and the Media Freedom Foundation. And people can check out the website, projectcensored.org, and click on the Personal News Network or PNN link from the site. That goes to validated independent news. It has a listing of stories that are currently under, you know, under research. We are actually writing, you know, the 2010 book for this coming fall. But in addition to doing the annual book that Project Censored has done for so long, now we're also just, you know, real time live on the net. We have a blog, The Daily Censored, and we're going to be posting stories from affiliate colleges and universities all year round on this validated independent news, because corporate media has made itself an irrelevant sideshow circus of infotainment. And, you know, we really need to have factual, trustworthy, transparent information about the key issues of the day. And Project Censored, you know, rather than merely report these things on a yearly basis, we've really tried to take, you know, the project founded by Carl Jensen, we've really tried to take those ideas through Peter Phillips and really expand them. And, you know, we're very hopeful. Ben Frymer will be taking over the project here coming up in the summer and into the fall. And Peter and I are going to really be pushing on this more Project Censored International kind of angle.
Oh, that really is terrific. And you and Peter are working on a book.
Yeah, we're all working on the 2010 book. You know, we put out the book every year. And Peter and I recently finished a chapter for the publication and another on Inside the Military Media Industrial Complex, looking at how it impacts movements for peace and social justice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, you know, we're looking at a wide variety of things. We have we're going to have a chapter in the book this year about media coverage of environmental issues and water issues. We currently have a list of 60 stories that have been narrowed down from the 100, well over 100 that we had. And we're going to be voting on them this week, actually, and then sending them off to the national judges. And soon we'll have our list of stories coming up for the book for release in the fall. And I don't know which of the 60 will end up, of course, in the book, but that's another reason why we have this validated independent news link on the website is that, you know, we have so many stories that are so important. It seems almost arbitrary to have them narrowed down to a list. But you know, Americans like lists, you know, the top 10, the top, you know, what have you. You might remember Irving Wallace, the Book of Lists. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Going back, yeah. So Americans like lists. So that's certainly trademark, you know, in that regard. But so many of these stories are so important, you know, that we just think people should be able to see them and be able to think about them. And so we're putting them all on the Project Censored website, you know, including stories like how, you know, over a quarter of the members of Congress are invested in defense contracts. You know, upwards of $200 million invested in companies that received defense contracts from 2006 through 2007. And it's a bipartisan effort. This is, again, this is just amazing. Another piece we're looking at is on lobbyists, the ever-growing problem of lobbying. And I know we saw Obama come in another one of these shell game, you know, rhetorical hope change type maneuvers was to have a new ethics policy on lobbyists and people working in government. And the day later, what does he do? He turns around and appoints a guy from Raytheon to number two position at the Pentagon. And he says, well, no, the ethics code doesn't count for Raytheon. this is appalling.
You can go right down the list of all of the people he appointed in key jobs.
Oh, come on. I mean, from Citibank and Goldman Sachs to Raytheon and so on. I mean, it's endless.
Well, I quoted, I forget what article it was in, I quoted someone who I exchanged a couple of emails with earlier today, a former government high insider who's come over on the right side of the fence, and she mentioned once she was in Indonesia, and a cab driver asked her, why do you let Goldman Sachs run your country?
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody asked us. Nobody asked us, Stephen. You know, the problem with lobbyists is so amazing. In fact, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, in 2008, for every day Congress was in session, lobbyists, this is how much money was spent on lobbying, over $32,000 per legislator per day. Over $32,000 per legislator per day.
Oh, per day is the killer. That is an astonishing statistic. That is really astonishing.
And for the third straight year, pharmaceutical and health interests spent more money on lobbying than any other. Followed, of course, by, you know, utilities and insurance, oil, gas, you know, AIPAC, food processing, you know, the war on organic food, how we're boycotting the racism conference because of issues with Israel, you know, how we can't seem to come up with, you know, sustainable energy because of the oil and gas lobby. I mean, this stuff's been going on forever, and here's yet another year, here's another study, here's another opportunity to find out who's really influencing legislators and who's paying for things to happen. You know, the question that cabbie asked, you know, well, you know, why do you let Goldman Sachs run the country? Why do you let the pharmaceutical companies say that we can't have single-payer health care? Well, that's because they're paying collectively $32,000 per legislature per day.
Oh, absolutely.
You and I can't, of course, sustain that kind of contribution.
Money talks. If we had those kind of resources, we could buy a lot of things that we wanted. But the kind of things that we want, Mickey, are not the kind of things that that the big boys want.
They're not purchasable. They're not for sale. They're things
right.
that committed communities want to create sustainable, better lives for most people.
And
it doesn't involve profits.
During the election campaign, Mickey, I followed Obama very closely, wrote a number of articles about him, but I followed his voting record just from that alone, but also where he was getting his money from. Right at the top of the list were Wall Street donors and corporate lobbyists, and he lied to the electorate and said he didn't take money from lobbyists. Well, they were one of his putting them all together. That comprised one of the biggest group of the people who contributed to his campaign.
Yes. Yeah,
so obviously we know who he's beholden to. And, of course, Wall Street, he's paid back big time many times over. Whatever they gave him, my God, it's mere pocket change compared to what they've gotten back. And they'll keep getting it.
Yeah, I'm afraid that that's going to continue.
Oh, it's going to continue. And the latest speech that he made a week or so ago at Georgetown University, it was really an outrageous speech, Mickey. He basically said he tried to explain why it's important to help the bankers out. Because, you know, they you get them healthy and they loan money and they create jobs. It's all a bunch of malarkey. The bankers are the ones that have gotten into us, gotten us into so much trouble.
Oh, yeah, and they're being rewarded. I mean,
they're
they evaporate billions into trillions of dollars, and then we heap more upon them while, you know, all around, most Americans can, you know, throw a stone from a rock from their house and, you know, land on a place that's either being foreclosed upon or people are teetering on the brink of foreclosure. And you know, this is the real, you know, again, humanitarian kind of cost of this is that this was done purposely by banks, by insurance people, et cetera, not all of them, but certain people within these rubrics to perpetrate this mass fraud against the public. And it's criminal. They shouldn't be getting money thrown at them. They should be getting prison sentences.
Oh, there's no question about it. These people are criminals, and for Obama to go along with them, it's the reason the second last article that I wrote, I titled Barack Obama Crime Boss.
Yeah, and you're not going to see a lot of coverage of this kind of thing in the media, just like you didn't see a lot of it in the Clinton years. You saw a lot of distractions. You saw culture war. You saw some social issues. I mean, it's kind of amazing, this whole astroturfing Fox Nation Tea Party that we just witnessed, where you see pictures of people, you know, basically being paid by, you know, certain groups to go and make it look as though there's this mass groundswelling with things like, you know, don't tax, you know, don't cut, you know, cut our taxes, not defense, was one of the big signs that you kept seeing over and over. Last I checked, defenses were paid with taxes.
Cut our taxes, not defense?
Yeah, I didn't understand that one at all, but that seemed to be a theme running through some of it. I mean, the logic is fascinating.
But they really picked the wrong analogy, this idea of a tea party.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, because it was a huge historical protest against the major monopolies and corporations of England.
Well, I mean, the tea issue was a very minor thing back. It certainly did not spark the Revolutionary War.
No, it was a distraction.
It was a distraction, absolutely. And a much greater issue was the fact that the colonists were using their own currency called scrip.
Yeah.
S-C-R-I-P, scrip.
Yes. Yep.
And they had broken free of the Bank of England and the European bankers. And this was a no-no.
No, that's an absolute no-no.
And so, the Brits wanted control of the colonies again, and they demanded that we stop issuing scrip. I'll be writing something about this in upcoming days or weeks or whatever.
So I'll be looking forward to seeing that.
Oh, it really is amazing. But I'm not certain what if there's one overwhelming cause of the Revolutionary War. But if there is one above all the others, I think it was this, the battle over who would control the nation's money. Would British bankers do it or would Americans do it?
Yeah, and that's, of course, why historians like Howard Zinn have long argued that the revolution was far less revolutionary than, you know, some other historians have claimed, like Bernard Balin and Gordon Wood and, and others. I mean, I won't deny there weren't some possible revolutionary seeds or tendencies in terms of human thought and growth somewhere. But, I mean, by and large, the nuts and bolts on the ground, you know, the fact is that fewer than a third of the people in the colony supported the efforts in the first place. It was largely generated by 10% of the population, mostly the merchant class. You can trace this through most wars and conflicts in human history. You got to go back to the money and control the resources.
Oh, indeed. It's a bad term to call to say our aristocracy, because we didn't really have an aristocracy. But the equivalent of it was the equivalent of our aristocracy against the real aristocracy in Britain.
Right. Like many wars, it's a war of elites where the people at the bottom pay the heaviest prices.
So which power structure would win out, ours or theirs?
Yeah.
And I reviewed a book way, way back, a terrific book that was published in 1980 called Cracks in the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
That one of the lines of the book went something like, you know, when all was said and done and the war was over and we prevailed, it was really the same old system under new management.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a changing of the guard.
And this man, Ferdinand Lundberg, who's long gone now, it's a terrific book. I was lucky to find a used copy.
That's where you have to get things nowadays. Some of these things are out of print. You have
I was amazed. I was able to find here almost 30 years ago this book came out, and he referred to our founding fathers, and I would still take them over what we have now. But I mean, they were bankers, they were businessmen, they were politicians, and he said, if you lump them all together, they would be the equivalent of today's Wall Street crowd.
Indeed, and if you take a look at, you know, Hamilton and John Jay in particular, John Jay actually said, you know, the people that own the country ought to run it.
What a quote.
I mean, that's, you know, at least that was honest.
Oh, it was honest. And John Adams said something that was very much the same thing. You know, the people who own the country are the ones who should run it.
And these folks here, I mean, through AT&T, Motorola, Google, I mean, these are the major corporations that were funding the major political party conventions last summer. The AT&T was one of the groups, you know, after Obama went back to Washington and flip-flopped on his domestic wiretapping issue, you know, they had this lavish party for lobbyists and so on, and journalists weren't allowed in. You know, they wouldn't let independent journalists come in and cover what was going on. I mean, we have a private corporation of Republicans and Democrats controlling the so-called debates in this country. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, it really is testimony to a profound system of propaganda and commercial propaganda that so many people just so seemingly go following blindly along.
I think it's also a sign of a nation in decline, Mickey. Things progressively seem to get worse. It goes in cycles. We can come up a little bit. We can sink lower a little bit. But if you look back, I'm old enough to remember remember World War II slightly, and I was very young at the time. Didn't really understand what was going on, but certainly the post-war period after 1945, I was 11 years old. I was well into school by that time. I knew what was going on. It was a different world that I lived in the 40s and the 1950s. My God, again, as imperfect as it was, we had leaders. I mean, Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower. I mean, I know all the crimes they committed. My goodness.
They
were covered with warts. But, I mean, you compare them to George Bush and, very sadly, Barack Obama, who literally has a failed presidency after 3 months.
Well, that's – and, you know, this the Eisenhower's military-industrial complex speech in 1961, I mean, you know, we're still dealing not only with the ramifications of that, but with the – just – that is the established order, you know, and that's actually what, you know, really pushed Peter and I to be looking even more into this military media industrial complex, you know, from the Pentagon pundits, you know, all the way through the lobbyists and these things. And I mean, again, you'll see that this year in the Project Censored Stories and in the 2010 book that'll be out this fall. You know, there's definitely continued focus at the project on, you know, the impact corporate America has on free flow of information, the strangulation of the free flow of information.
Oh, indeed, Mickey. I think you could add one more element to your list. You can include academia.
Since I'm talking to you from my office, you probably could. I mean, in fact, I did just get back from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
Yeah.
As a visiting scholar in the library, giving talks on censorship and media. And it was interesting. I was at the University of Nebraska because that's a place where they invited and uninvited Bill Ayers last year to come and speak. And basically people were calling the university, threatening violence against people because they thought Bill Ayers was a terrorist. So the irony never ceased to amuse me. And of course, we saw at least one in part. Ward Churchill recently won his trial. Whether he's reinstated or not, we don't know. But at least that was a victory for academic freedom and free speech. Whether you like Ward Churchill or not, that's not the point. You know, but censorship in academics is an age-old issue and concern, and it's a shame because it's at least one of the last vestiges we have as a free forum, you know, as a free public forum to discuss controversial ideas and really try to learn and grow and exercise our mental liberties.
Oh, indeed. I happen to be one who likes Ward Churchill because he really goes for the jugular.
That he does.
Oh, he will take on the criminals, and he will hit him right between the eyes. We've got to take another break, Mickey. The hour has flown.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Come on with Mickey Huff. Mickey, every hour, I have the same feeling. The time absolutely evaporates. An hour program feels like 10 minutes.
Indeed it does.
Oh, there's never enough time to go into all we want to talk about, but we've got a few minutes left. I want to give it to you to, pick up on whatever else is important that we left out of this discussion.
Well, yeah, and in a few minutes we'll have to cram some things in. Since we were hitting on some of the founders, you know, I just remembered an interesting quote from a book I was reading, from Palmer Raids to the Patriot Act that I finished a while ago by Chris Fanon. Madison actually once said in a House of Representatives discussion in 1794 that the censorial power is in the people over the government and not in the government over the people. And you can add to that list, of course, you know, the corporations and economic entities. And this is something that we really need to take hold of and to remember. And if you go back in the last 2 years in Project Censored and look at some of the top stories, they were civil liberty stories. They were stories about habeas corpus suspension. They were stories about martial law. This year coming up again, we're looking at a number of stories of abridgment of civil liberties, including the so-called constitution-free zones from Department of Homeland Security that talks about how U.S. Within 100 miles of the U.S. border or coastlines and so on, and like two-thirds of the population lives within 100 miles of a coastline, you know, or something, or border, basically says that they can detain you. You have no real rights in these areas. So that's another one of the stories that we're looking at and thinking back at this, you know, again, back at the founders. These are people that we're supposed to adore and laud, but we're never supposed to read or study or think about them. You know, we should really be paying closer attention to so many of these stories. And I mean, again, we have several stories going on for the 2010 book on Congress helping bankers basically loot the Treasury, Wall Street control of government. I mean, there's a number of these kinds of stories going on. Stories on still more stories on election theft and election irregularities. So I think this year in the 2010 book, I think that the books have been getting better every year. I'm very hopeful, and I'm thinking that this book is going to even be more information packed and have more diversity of views and different ideas and things going on across the spectrum than even before. So you know, we're really moving forward here, and we're really trying to, as we stated earlier, really transform the project into much more than just an annual book, and I think we're well on the way to achieving that.
Oh, it's so important, Mickey. I'll add one point. People ask me, it seems more often these days than I remember before, but people who know what's going on, who are very upset about it, and yet lament to me and say, well, you know, I mean, you know, what are we going to do about this? We're sitting out here. They're there. They have all the power, all the money. I mean, what can we do? So, do you have any ideas?
We need to more and more be the media ourselves, you know, like we're doing here, like you're doing. Dave Matheson's book, Be the Media, has come out talking about citizen journalism and how we all need to take responsibility as citizens on not only how we inform ourselves, but how we also try to inform others and build information community. Just a recent story, you know, that's been in the papers and been on people's minds was the rescue of the captain from the vessel from the so-called Somali pirates. And it's just yet another example of gross distortion in media. Now, of course, it's good that this person is safe and so on. But you'll remember this person, the captain of the ship, had a name. He had a family. He was from Vermont. The three people that were killed were just called Somali pirates.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah, and it's not even about piracy. These are rovers. These are not even traditional pirates. The use of this kind of propagandistic terminology totally skews and taints, you know, what's going on. It doesn't bother to look at any of the problems that have been going on in Somalia for decades.
Nikki, we're out of time. I've got to break it up. I just want to get one thought in.
Mm-hmm.
When people ask me what I mentioned, my answer is we can do plenty. The point is we have to do it. We have to know what's going on, and we have to decide that we're just not going to take this anymore. And our history shows that there are times when grassroots power got the government to change what it was doing. We can do it now, and we better do it. But, Mickey, we're out of time. I thank you for coming on again.
Much appreciated.
You will come back, right?
Absolutely.